Are you worried that recent events have derailed your retirement plans? It certainly made us reassess all aspects of ours, and that's why we're proud to offer our listeners a chance to work with David McClellan, a fiduciary financial advisor from Forum Financial. David's practice specializes in financial life coaching and retirement planning, and right now he's offering free consultations for our listeners if you mention the podcast. As part of this consultation, David can help you understand your financial freedom number and what that means to you in assessing your future financial plans. If you want to build wealth, if you want to make optimal decisions within your financial life, David is someone you need to talk to. You can reach him at 312-933-8823. Once again, that's David McClellan at 312-933-8823. He's located in Austin, Texas, but he's got a nationwide clientele. Do yourself a favor and get some great financial advice for free and see if you might want to work with Mr. McClellan. I think you'll be happy with your phone call. Welcome to the Everyone Gets a Trophy podcast, Mexico Beaches Edition. We've had a little bit of a break with the podcast, just as the Longhorns have had a little break and now are back at the grindstone in their preparation for the University of Washington. So too am I back at the grindstone, or at least the podcasting version of it, joined by Ian Boyd, the king of the Panthers. El Pantara is what they call him down in Mexico. Ian, what's going on, man?
Everyone in my house has had a vicious cold.
Oh.
Except for me.
Oh, well, don't let anyone near you. Don't let anyone touch you. Drink, take vitamin C, drink chamomile tea.
It's either going to happen or not. We'll see.
Honestly, you might just want to give your wife a big smooch and get it over with, because it's going to happen.
I don't know. I mean, it's been like over a week. Like the little girl had it last week, the weekend before this one.
Oh, okay.
One at a time, dropping like flies. So, I mean, I don't know. We'll see.
Perhaps your body has already met the enemy and defeated it. Perhaps there will be no cold.
It could be.
Perhaps you are the iron wall that viruses smash upon, just like Jim Harbaugh.
Not always. I can tell you that. Every time, do you ever have this with like your son? It's probably more pronounced because my family's, there's more of us, but every time one of the people in my family gets a stomach bug.
Yeah.
Just for the next week. Just all the time in my downtime, I'll be thinking, "Am I next? That trash bin over there? Am I going to be bent over it, retching in the next half hour?"
It's more pronounced when your kids are young because they go to kindergarten or daycares or nursery school or whatever, and they all just pass around different viruses. It's basically like a spring break, but a different kind of virus. Sure. All right, Ian. Let's try to make a podcast that goes viral, as I was once instructed when I was working with SB Nation. A brilliant exec said, "What are we doing to make more viral podcasts than YouTube's?" As if virality is something that you can just will into existence. It's like, well, we're making content, whether it becomes viral or not.
I have an idea.
What's that?
Just have somebody like drop a wildly offensive take.
Yeah, well, that is one way. That's the ESPN talking ahead way. That's time tested and proven. Hey man, I want to talk a little bit about some of these guys we just got today, and today being December 18th, Monday. Texas did a trifecta in the portal and in the recruiting trail. Have you watched any of Andrew Makuba, the transfer from Clemson, Austin LBJ product? Did look at Texas under Herman. Apparently Herman was late to the game recruiting him in earnest. Makuba took his ball, went to Clemson, was successful there in two of his 3 years. Any thoughts on Makuba? Is he purely coming in as a nickel, or do you think he could also be a free safety?
Well, he could be a free safety for sure.
Yeah.
I think he's coming in as a nickel. The only... The only hesitation I would have there is if it apparently it's not set in stone whether Ryan Watts is coming back or not.
Hmm.
And if Ryan Watts came back, I move him to nickel. And I play Makuba at one of the safety spots. But barring that, I think he's almost guaranteed to just end up in Barron's spot. Because he played He played a little bit of nickel this last year that I watched. Have you watched much of his film from this year?
A little, yeah, a little bit. He was almost exclusively nickel this year, it seems like.
I watched like one or two games where he was, and a couple other games where he played more like free safety.
Oh, interesting. So the I think I
But
saw Syracuse and he played nickel.
oh, really? I saw.
Yeah.
I didn't watch that one. Florida State, he played nickel.
Oh.
Maybe Miami, I can't remember. And they played a lot of good passing teams, so there's quite a lot of film to mine. Because he played like Van Dyke in Miami. He played, I think he played Leonard in Duke. Not maybe not a passing team, but just an interesting team to watch. They
Yep.
played Florida State. They played Syracuse. Notre Dame, not a passing team, but just another. What does it look like when you're fitting the run against a big boy run game?
Yeah.
He played free safety in that one. To me, he looks like, it reminds me a little bit of Mykel Thompson, older Mykel Thompson.
Okay. I'll take that.
Long, rangy, fast, can absolutely turn and run with people. Totally comfortable tackling in the open field. But maybe not like he's fast, but he's not. I don't know if he has any like really freakish elements. He's just a very versatile, all-around good player.
Very experienced. Probably what he's probably started, what, 25 college games?
Maybe more. I think he's a, I think he started all 3 years.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I think because I think injury hampered one of his years a little bit, but
This
okay.
is
I mean,
like 30 games probably or more.
that's a solid dude. Hey, real quick, I don't want to go too far on a tangent here. You mentioned Ryan Watts, and I could see his efficacy as a nickel. I am curious though, when you have Watts at nickel, you do limit your coverages a little bit, don't you? Because you're not always, are you sure Watts can carry up a slot fade or a slot go if you have a vacated safety behind him?
I don't see why that would be harder than what he does now. Because sometimes he's on, every once in a while, he's on an island now on the boundary, on outside.
True, but he can put his hands on people on the boundary. Hard to put your hands on the a slot, right?
Yeah, that's true. I guess someone a little quicker would be better, but I don't
Yeah.
know if he's like, he's pretty quick in his own right, I think. I think his issues are more like long speed and he just avoids having to use it. I don't know if quickness is so much his flaw.
No, I think what you're interested in is the ability to cover ground in a short space, and you can do it with length, and you can do it with quickness, you can do it with both. And Watts has length, right? And I think he's fairly quick for his size in a short area. I'm more interested in the carrying someone part because I do feel like you can play a basically any coverage in the world if you believe in your nickel's ability to cover and carry any kind of route against any kind of receiver. I guess I'm just thinking flipping the battlefield. Think about how Texas, either strategically putting Mitchell or Worthy at the nickel, has really worked over big nickels all season.
For all that though, Jahdae Barron played a lot of underneath zone this year,
Oh yeah, that's our scheme.
which is weird because, well, the year before they let him carry more.
Yeah.
Against trips, he was like a de facto corner. And this year they even against trips they would keep him underneath, I think because he was so good at disguising and jumping things.
Well, in the screen game, he was just a
In the
monster.
screen game, yeah, exactly. So I think they were thinking like, let's let Barron play underneath and just clean up under here.
I said I didn't want a tangent, but I'll allow us a 2-minute tangent. The
Watts could do that too.
argument for Ryan Watts to safety,
Yeah.
yay or nay?
I mean, we just he'd probably be good at it. Ohio State wanted to do that to him, and that's partly why he's at Texas. But I don't know. I just haven't seen him do it, you know.
I think he'd be good.
Such a he I there's so much more you have to process. I feel like if he's at safety, he's unless he takes to it like a fish to water, which I think is probably relates a lot to like intelligence. Like Anthony Cook was a nickel for like 2 years before he moved back to safety, and he was good immediately. Keaton Crawford, a couple of years now at safety, still is not really getting it, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. You just never know how a guy is gonna take to like, okay, now instead of like the two reads that you had before, and then you'd be focusing on the route stem and the footwork of the receiver and how you're gonna thwart it. Now we want you to look at the tackle. Now we want you to find number two and when it turns into number three and blah blah blah. And this is
Yeah, that's
your
a good point.
this, I don't know. I mean, it just depends on him, and the coaches would have a good feel for it probably, but I don't.
Well, let's talk about a guy flipping the script a little bit from the portal to recruiting. The old-fashioned way of acquiring talent, you go after a high school guy and you sign him and he comes to your school, you develop them and then he starts. It's quaint, isn't it, Ian?
Yeah.
Xavier Filsaime, is that how you pronounce it?
I was hoping I wouldn't have to.
I've heard like five different pronunciations, so let's just go with Filsaime, all right?
I think that's close.
All right. The guy was an early Florida commit. Texas flipped him. I'm sure in no small part because of the potential for playing time, but also because Texas is 12-1 and in the semifinals for the national title, and Florida was a disaster. And if any of you had the misfortune of watching Florida, one of the worst coached football teams I saw all year. In fact, the state of Florida, they're two of their three major teams, very poorly coached. Miami and Florida. Florida State, I thought, was pretty well coached. But he's going to be a Longhorn. He's a safety. He's exactly the kind of guy we're kind of describing, at least. He's a guy who's both physically gifted, has traits, but also seems to have football IQ and sees the field. Did you watch any of his high school tape or have any sense of him?
Yeah. He actually kind of reminds me of Makuba. I wonder from their last names if they have a similar heritage. They're like recent children of immigrants or something.
I
That's
think they're
possible.
both Croatian.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Big Stipe Miocic fans.
Yep.
Devastated by the pectoral tear to John Jones. Yeah, he's like rangy. Not like a huge guy, but not afraid to run the alley and hit a guy. He ran a 10.5, Paul, as a sophomore.
I saw that. That's crazy. And has he stopped running track?
I can take a look.
I mean, well, we don't need to, but just it's weird that his sophomore time is listed. I mean, you'd think he has other times, right?
Yeah, he's still running.
Okay. All right. Yeah, 10-5 is no joke as a sophomore, and that ain't gonna get slower over time.
Right.
So that's
Well,
legit.
it did get slower.
Oh, he did?
His 11th grade times are like, I think I see 11:04 is his best.
Oh, interesting. I wonder if he got injured.
Could or he's just,
Not doing track.
yeah, or maybe he didn't warm up and he focused on, I don't know.
Maybe he's fattying.
Don't really care, He's fat. He's going to be a fast safety, even if that
Yeah.
never goes back down,
Agreed. What kind of so we have an interesting combination of young guys that look the part and move around the part at safety, and then we got these older veterans, or soon they're going to become the older veterans like Jaron Thompson,
Yeah.
who are more athletically limited. There's a little tension there of when do you go with the youth movement and how do you ease those guys in? Probably you don't want to pencil Filsaime in as a starter, but you certainly want to get his feet wet, even as a true freshman, just like Derek Williams did.
Well, it's a good thing Texas put such a premium on special teams.
Yes.
Such a great way to, if you have an abundant overabundance of 6'2", 205-pound guys that run like the wind and hit. It's always, always money in the banana stand.
Or a freaking running back By the way, a pass catching running back who's supposed to be a skill guy, a soft guy. Trey Wisner is a freaking maniac.
Oh, I
So,
thought you were talking about that Hawaiian kid for Utah.
oh no, he's awesome. But no, Wisner
Yeah,
was a
Wisner.
freaking madman on special teams.
Yeah, Wisner seems like he could play any position in
He just seems
if
like a football player.
yeah. Golly, that guy.
All right,
Yeah,
so how do you like look? I mean, one thing I will say is Texas is pretty committed to playing a lot of bodies on defense, and you've got Keaton Crawford leaving, departing with his snaps. So you're going to have an opportunity to still play Jaron Thompson, Michael Taft, and still get Derek Williams and Filsame out there, right?
Yeah, you would just pair him, right?
Yeah.
So always play Taff or Jaren.
Always have an experienced guy out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like it. I like
If
that.
Jaren comes back, I think there's some question about Jaren too, right?
Why would he not come back?
I don't know. If I don't know. If he
Does
doesn't have, he could just be like,
I don't think he's an NFL grade.
no, probably not. The lack of playing time. He could, if he feels like if he feels like he could be in the NFL, then maybe he thinks I should go somewhere and start and play, go back to playing 70, 80 snaps a game.
I think that's overrated. I think the NFL evaluates you on your snap that you're in, not the total. Like, if that were true, Georgia wouldn't have a bunch of these dudes drafted in the first round, right? They don't play many
Well,
snaps for Kirby Smart.
yeah, but the guys that get drafted from there are freaks, and Jaren is not.
No, that's true. But what I'm saying is, I think the NFL looks at the quality of your snaps and your larger ecosystem. And if they see that Texas has a lot of talent in the secondary, they don't begrudge you that you're not out there every down, right? They're fine with you playing 49 snaps, right?
So just depend then on if Texas kind of edges him out or not.
Yeah, that's fair. I think he should return. I think it makes sense. I think he would actually improve his stock. And I still think he can get more matured and get bigger and get stronger, all that. I mean, he's still a young, growing guy. Speaking of young growing guys, Sark has targeted a guy that I think is very interesting. His name is Emory Winston from Georgia. About 6'1", 235,
Six
something like
one. I think
that. Yeah.
he's listed a little taller, but I can
I think he's
believe.
listed taller.
Right.
I think you can see on film he's not 6'2.5" or whatever he's claiming. So,
Okay.
here's what I think we're doing with that. And people are wondering, I mean, I obviously like for a true tight end, I like a 6'5" guy if I can get him. Absolutely. The thing I think Sark is going after, and if you'll remember, he went after a guy. We were also looking at a guy from Bishop Gorman in Vegas with similar characteristics. I think Sark likes the idea of a combo tight end matching with a true tight end, the 6'6" guy who looks like the classic tight end. And then I think a little bit shorter, sturdier, more put together guy who can be your insert guy. You could be your lead blocker on power. Can also do some stuff with the ball in his hands as a pass catcher. If y'all remember the more traditional Sark, Norm Chow, Pete Carroll offenses at USC, they use the fullback quite a bit.
Yeah.
And they use him as a pass catcher and as a blocker. And also, OU, some of their best vintages of their offenses. This is up your wheelhouse, Ian. You like these guys, the Jeremiah Halls, the JD Runnels. They are very good physical blockers, but
Their
also.
current offensive coordinator is one of those, Seth Luttrell.
Yeah. Very capable blocker, but also like could actually do damage with the ball in their hands, right?
Yep.
Not just catching a little 5 yard pass in the flat, and the first guy that hits them, they fall down, right?
Like so many Mac Brown tight ends of old.
Yeah, or fullbacks, right? And so I think this guy is a hybridized move tight end, not your traditional flex tight end or not your traditional hand on the ground tight end. So I think he's a complementary piece. And I think that's kind of what Sark is going for.
Jordan Whittington was almost that.
Yeah, he's just a 30 pounds too shy, right?
But even still, he still did that at times.
He did. I mean, they put Whittington in the backfield and he tried to lead block someone, but there's a physics equation there of a 200
Right,
pound
right.
guy versus a 235 guy. And also, as offense has evolved and as the 49ers prove every week, as the Baltimore Ravens prove every week, as offenses evolve and suddenly Alabama is starting inside linebackers who weigh 225 instead of 255 as they were just 10 years ago, right? Suddenly that lead fullback who can deliver a blow just running power, that guy's something that inside linebacker, that undersized wants to play the pass, inside linebacker, that's a guy you don't want to see coming at you full steam. And a little niftier and a little able to little better able to get low pads than, people say, hey, well, we use Jatavion Sanders as a lead blocker sometimes in some of our plays. That's true, but he can't get low and drive out an inside linebacker. He's actually trying to sort of screen a guy, like get good initial contact and then screen him off. So anyway, that's what I think this recruitment is about. What do you think? Have I sold you on the premise?
I mean, I think those are all very good ideas. I'd like to think that that's what Sark is thinking. Don't know for sure. He could just be thinking like, I'm gonna go to Atlanta and win a head-to-head for an Atlanta kid against the SEC and show, you know.
I mean, I understand that like recruit people talk that way all the time. I think that's way overblown. I don't think we're like,
Oh yeah, why are they
I don't
taking?
think we're doing statement recruiting. Like, I think they took him because
Oh, they
they
definitely
wanted
are.
him.
They do definitely do that some.
No. But what I'm saying, Ian, is it's an additional benefit. They actually like the player.
Yeah, it could be.
They're not just randomly taking a guy because he's in Georgia.
The good thing about when they can play tight end too is that with these modern defenses, you don't always get a huge benefit from playing with a fullback because sometimes the guy that you have to block is hard to find because he's
Fair
coming
point.
from different angles and at depth. But if you just extend the line of scrimmage with extra tight ends, then it's like, okay, we have to fit these gaps with somebody on site or we're in trouble.
So it's funny. It's kind of a funny thing in football, and our pal Rod Babers likes to talk about this. Extreme formations force the defense to declare. So if you line up with five wide, I mean you're not going to be able to disguise a ton of coverages. You could just do some disguise, but ultimately you got to account for those guys out there, right? Similarly, if you go double tight and maybe even unbalanced, right? You put an extra offensive lineman over. You have to physically put a human being over there, or else you're just exposed and like literally they can turn the corner. If you want to see an ugly example of this, watch how we played the counter gap against Oklahoma in 2020 and 2021. I mean, literally, we don't have an edge setter on some of those runs that go where the guy goes untouched. So that's absolutely apt. I think you're right. If you're worried about run blitzes and stunts and all that sort of stuff messing up your run game, just keep putting dudes in the line of scrimmage, extend them out, and they'll have to put some guys up there, or else they're just going to get run over by momentum.
I will say this for the old school fullback though. Do you watch like I think it was Matt Rhule's last team at Temple. He had a fullback named like Nick Charga.
Good
And
fullback name.
they gave him a single digit number because he was great. Because Rhule gave the single digit numbers to the toughest guys on the team, right? That's just like one of his gimmicks. And they were playing I think they were playing Southern Florida. I can't remember exactly. It was like some up-tempo spread team in the AAC. And they're lining up in like 22 personnel. And the game plan was obviously we're going to slow the game down and run the ball and control the flow. But what happened was they would line up in these huge sets and then run like wide power. And it would be like Sharga, and there'd be like a full cornerback or like a cover safety that would have to come in and fit the edge. And Sharga just like pulverized them. And the game was a shootout with Temple scoring like 45 points on long runs running behind Sharga. Because USCF had like no idea how to fit it, no personnel that were up for it. It was awesome.
Jargo sounds like a Neanderthal that they found in ice. They de-iced him, and his only thing he could say was Sharga, me Sharga. Yeah, that's funny. Leave it to us to do a Temple tangent, but yeah, it's look, the more things shift.
One more
Oh
Sharga.
no, oh God.
Mac Brown was announcing the game.
No.
And he was talking about Sharga, and he's like an academic All-American or something. And he was like, so he's smart, and you don't have to tell him twice who to block.
Oh God. Thank you for that folksy wisdom, Mac. Well, I've got a little financial wisdom for you, and it's not folksy, although it is time tested and true. It's about our friend David McClellan, a former multinational championship swimmer at the University of Texas, a partner with Form Financial Management, a fiduciary registered investment advisor. Not your typical advisor, because he spent most of his career in executive roles with Morningstar and Pershing. And if you're managing your own money, chances are you're suboptimal because you don't have the time or knowledge. You don't know what you don't know. And David can help you optimize your finances in a meaningful way that help you build more wealth over time. Chances are, if you're working with another advisor, their advice is either conflicted or it's very narrow in scope. David works very broadly and deeply with you, providing fiduciary advice wherever money touches your life. And finally, retirement planning is David's specialty. This guy has published white papers about retirement, about the retirement tax bomb. He was featured in Kiplinger magazine on a 7-part series, explaining how all that money we've saved up in our 401ks and IRAs is actually a ticking bomb. And there are ways to defuse it if you have the right EOD disposal guy. And that's David. If you're within 10 years of retirement, he can help you understand when you can retire with confidence. What you need to do is reach out to David. You can arrange a free consultation. There's no strings attached. You're not going to be added to any weird email lists. Basically, he wants to assess you. You need to assess him and figure out if you have an opportunity to work together. Give him a call, 312-933-8823. That's David McClellan. He is phenomenal at what he does, a really good guy as well, and heck of a dude. Give him a call. Arrange to have a Zoom with him, 30-minute meeting. And see if you have some mutual scope of cooperation. And I think you will be very pleased if you make that call. All right, Mr. Boyd, I want to talk about a couple of things, and I'll give you the choice. This is Boyd's choice. You want to
Choice.
talk a little Texas Washington of ways this matchup is being characterized that you think is not exactly correct by the popular media, or do you want to talk a little bit Bama, Michigan as a little sidewinder? Because it might be a potential opponent for the University of Texas.
Give me Michigan, Bama.
All right, Michigan, Bama for 500. Ian, make sure you say your answer in the form of a question. Which team will win this game, and will both teams combined score over 43 points?
43?
43?
Is that the over under?
No. I said 43.
I think they will.
Oh?
Maybe not by a lot.
All right. Who's going to
Yeah.
win?
I don't know yet. It's a tough eval for me, 'cause their Michigan's game is so much like power and size.
Yeah.
And Alabama is just not the team for that, because they're bigger and more powerful, I think, than everybody else in the country. So,
Except maybe a team in Austin.
they couldn't bully Texas's D line, but Texas had to throw the ball around to beat them. Michigan needs to do the same, and I don't know if they will. I don't know if Harbaugh will,
Let me ask you this. How is Michigan going to throw the ball on Bama? Specifically, what are they going to do about Dallas Turner and Chris Braswell coming off the edge? Because doesn't Bama have enough quality in their secondary to jam it up, to not give clean releases, to not allow that little Michigan short passing game that that McCarthy seems to thrive in? I would make McCarthy hold the ball, and I'd bring a little heat because I don't think Michigan can block him.
An interesting quirk is that their right tackle was just getting destroyed, just getting bombed.
Yes.
But they moved him to right guard because the right guard broke his foot or ankle or
They're
whatever.
all American. Yeah.
And they almost looked a little better for
Against.
it. Iowa.
Did they look better? Because Iowa held them to about 220 yards. And all the points Michigan scored were off of Iowa miscues and Iowa offensive buffoonery.
That's every Iowa game.
Well, I know exactly.
Iowa could play the like Randy Moss Patriots and it would look like that.
So I guess my point is if Iowa had a NCAA average offense, FBS average offense, that Michigan-Iowa game would have been a field goal.
Don't know. It was the week after Ohio State. I
Yeah,
didn't
that counts.
watch it. I just don't know. I'm not entirely sure how much to make of it, you know?
All right. Well, Michigan did play a whole season. The problem is
Sort of.
how many real teams did they play? One, two.
I've been watching for to study them. I've been watching just two.
Mean, but Penn State's offense is not exactly impressive.
I only watched it to see just like because Penn State has linemen at least.
Yeah, when they have size and they've got freaky dudes running
I
around.
watched it to see how it looked when they tried to go downhill on the Michigan O-D line, because I figure that's super relevant against
Yeah.
Alabama. But like their quarterback's timing is awful, waste their receivers. They're not, not an impressive team, and their defense was like hell on wheels on 3rd and 7, but manageable on 1st and 10.
Yeah, the problem, and people ragged on Manny Diaz in Penn State when Michigan ran the ball 32 times in a row or whatever it was. I mean, several times they punted while running it 32 times in a row. But also, the thing to remember is the construction of that Penn State defense, the value proposition was dominant secondary, outstanding pass rush. So what that means is as an offense, you need to try to go play with a lead. Which is the antithesis of what the Penn State offense did. So I just, I think Manny Diaz got a bad deal on that one. And frankly, they had a good defense all year. And I know Longhorn fans have a bias against him because of what he did here. Just it's not coincidental that he's been successful every other place he's been as a defensive coordinator. And wasn't successful here. So maybe it was something a little more than Manny Diaz, but that's an aside. So let me throw you this out for Alabama. I think their defense has the potential to dominate Michigan's offense. Like whip them. However, I think Michigan's defense has the potential to give Alabama a lot of problems. Not dominate them, but I think give them some problem. I think they're going to find themselves in 3rd and 13 a lot. And that's not a good place to be in general. But if you're going to be in that situation, Jalen Milroe's not a bad quarterback to have because in this game, he's going to run the ball 15 to 20 times. We know that. And he's going to chunk it deep a dozen times. And I don't think Michigan's seen a style of play or at least an athletic quarterback like Milroe this year. I don't think they know what that feels like. But I think Alabama's power run game, I think Michigan will handle and spit out, to be honest. Unless they involve Milroe heavily.
I think they'll trade in that. They'll get a tackle for loss on a run blitz. Then they'll get creased on another play. But then they'll get, what I would worry about in that one is how complex Michigan can present things because they have, pro style defensive coordinators the last couple of years
And a lot of time.
and a lot of time. And so I mean, probably the way Alabama loses this game is Jalen Milroe commits two or more turnovers.
Who's more likely to commit two or more turnovers, Jalen Milroe or JJ McCarthy?
Jalen Milroe.
You think so?
Yeah.
You think just because they won't allow McCarthy to do that?
I think I have more faith in McCarthy than you do. So
Well, I don't think it's a matter of faith. I think if Alabama wants to win this game, Jalen Milroe has to carry that offense. JJ McCarthy, I don't know if he's capable of carrying that offense against
oh,
Bama.
I think he's capable of more than he's shown this year.
I mean, I've seen him play some good games. I've also seen him suck.
I think they have to ask more of McCarthy to win this game.
They have to. I mean, he's got to run the ball. He's got to throw. They've got to attack. Like, they can't just do their little 6-yard out route stuff.
Got to be like the Ohio State game last year.
Yeah, where they came out throwing.
Yeah.
Saban's record with a long time to prepare is
Yeah.
remarkable. Have you looked into this at all?
No.
I'm not going to awe you with all the stats, but basically, if Nick Saban is preparing for a consequential game with a big layoff, you're in trouble because they point all those analysts. Saban has a great feel for the game. And I think what he's good at doing is seeing on the surface, hey, here's what I see with Michigan after I watch a little film of them. Let's get our little crack team of analysts, and I want you to deep dive on this for 50 hours on what we're seeing and tell us if you think something is there. And I think often they come up with, yeah, there's something there, boss. We should craft something around this. And then other times they say, yeah, actually, it's no. This is just how they structured that defense against that team. This is not what they're trying to do. So I do think Alabama, in terms of preparation, is at least a push, if not advantaged, whereas Harbaugh has not done particularly well in bowls or playoff.
True. Their game plan against TCU was disappointing, to say the least.
Poor to sit, yeah.
I couldn't believe rewatching because I thought they were going to destroy. Like TCU had like a five guard offensive line, that's what I called them. And it was like, just blitz these guys. They cannot block you. And Michigan insisted on blitzing with only four, like the whole game. Yeah, I just couldn't believe it.
And
Way too much.
they also tried to play some zone, but giving their linebackers sort of man under responsibilities. And depending on how TCU lined up, sometimes TCU just carried those guys up and threw the ball to the open receiver.
Or Duggan on the scramble.
Or Duggan just ran. Yeah.
They ran the ball really well in Michigan too, which was shocking.
Well, last year's TCU team ran the crap out of the ball in general. That was an underappreciated aspect of that team.
But that was Michigan did not have a, they did not look like a weak run defense before that game,
No.
which does not bode well for this Alabama game.
So that's the other thing, Ian. I'm not going to pretend the SEC was a world beater. In fact, I don't think there was any league that was clearly, oh, that's the league this year. I think there's individual teams that were good. But I don't think there was a dominant league in college football. But I know this. The Big Ten was literally three football teams and then just varieties of mediocrity to trash.
They set back offensive football this year.
Badly. And that's the other
Really?
thing. Do you get as frustrated as I do when they say, well, that's just it's a style of football. That's they're playing the deep and field position and they try to play that stuff. Like, it's not just Iowa fans, by the way. It's Wisconsin fans. It's Illinois. It's like all these programs, right? Nebraska. It's actually not a choice. It's your limitations. And in fact, you're not even attempting offense. Like you have possessions where you're not even attempting to move the ball down the football field, right? And it's offensive, to watch, no pun intended. And I don't think you can learn a ton about Michigan facing those teams. I mean, I'm not going to pretend Alabama's this elite offense, but they have a good offense now. They've grown since we saw them, right?
Yeah. I
And
w
I think their athleticism is going to pose some problems for them. That said, I think, as you said, Michigan's very sophisticated on defense, and I think they're going to have something for Moreau. So.
I will say just this for the Big Ten. As ugly as their football is, and as much as it's like a like you said, it's a limitation. It's not like a choice.
Right.
They're very good at playing in the mud, basically. They don't know how to get out. They can't get the skill talent to get out. But when you play them, it is hard not to get mired into the same deal.
Yeah.
And it's the only conference that consistently plays cold weather games. And I can't believe that A, they play their championship game indoors, and B, if I were them, I would be fighting so hard to make some of these playoff games in cold weather.
Oh, no doubt.
They don't seem to have any interest in it whatsoever.
I
If you
think
guys ever want to
it's
win a championship, you should be clamoring for a semifinal in like Lambeau.
yeah, unfortunately, that's a fan choice too, right?
The
You're
fans.
trying, I mean, these are attached to the bowls, right? So
Yeah.
you're still, there's a reason that the New Year's Day bowls are in New Orleans,
Right.
Pasadena, et cetera. I mean, the national title game's at Houston, for heaven's sake. So, yeah, I mean, if you went to a true NFL subdivision, which is what college football is becoming, then you'd have some sort of home field advantage. Like you pick a regional market if you are the top seed and you get to play your bowl game, or the playoff game, I should say. You'd have to divorce it from the bowls and you'd say, we're playing it in Soldier Field in
Yeah.
Chicago, right? But that's going to be unpopular with fans. Even if the Big Ten's for it, but yeah,
It's the only way the Big Ten
all
is
that,
ever going to
but
come
that
back.
Big Ten fans still want to go to Pasadena too.
It's the only way they're ever going to have any chance against the SEC, though.
I think they'll have a chance.
I mean, every once in a while.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, Ohio State's an SEC team, Ian. They are.
They can't beat Michigan.
I mean, yeah. Unfortunately, so Michigan built itself to defeat Ohio State, right?
Yeah.
Ohio State built itself to be an SEC team with maximal talent, passing factory, quarterbacks, receivers, edge rushers, glamour sort of positions, right? They struggle specifically with Michigan, but they did just fine against Georgia. People like to pretend that that Georgia team was fait accompli, right?
Right.
They're a shanked field goal and Marvin Harrison Jr. having a concussion from taking the L.
Yeah, 2 years in a row for them with that.
Yeah, so I mean, like Ohio State is fully capable. I think Michigan's capable if they can build out a little better or just get the right matchups. Hell, they could do it this year. Who
Or if
knows?
they could, if they could play him at Hines or whatever they call that now,
You're
that would help a
obsessed
lot
with the.
too.
You're obsessed with the cold weather.
It makes a difference.
Of course it makes a difference. Yeah. I mean, in fact,
In the game.
when people talk about statistics or like all-time NFL great quarterbacks, if you're ever comparing quarterbacks without factoring in where they played their games, Aaron Rodgers, for God's sake, played in Lambeau Field. Tom Brady played in freaking Boston. Peyton Manning played in Indianapolis in a dome. I mean,
Yep.
it makes a difference. So yeah, I'm with you there 100%.
That was Julian Edelman had that classic burn on Peyton Manning at the ESPYs, where Peyton Manning was hosting, right? And was telling all these and roasting Kevin Durant. Everybody was loving it. And Edelman came up to receive an award with the Patriots for like the best team of the year or something. And he's like, I never thought I'd be saying this, but Peyton Manning is kind of killing it tonight. But then we are indoors.
That's awesome. That's great. That is cool.
Good.
Well, I know a guy who's good indoors and outdoors. He's an all-weather, all-terrain mortgage guy. He's versatile, he's durable. His name is Gabe Winslow. You can reach him at 832-557-1095. Or you can go to Mortgages by Gabe. Hey, best thing to do, just pick up the phone and call him or send him a text if you're not into the whole phone thing. Gabe is really sharp, really good at what he does. He has a law degree, National Merit Scholar, graduated from Texas early. As it's been posed to me, if Gabe's so smart, why did he leave Texas early? Why did he graduate fast? You got to drag that out, that college life. But I guess he's a serious-minded fella that wanted to get and do a bunch of mortgages for folks and help them realize their dreams and their house. Hey, interesting thing that's going on right now, Ian. I'm not sure if you're aware. We're at a 7-month low for interest rates, and interest rates just recently over the last week had one of the lowest, biggest drops in the history of the market. So there's a lot of indications that the Fed seems to be, if not just pausing, but also looking at actually actively cutting rates in 2024. That could create an interesting opportunity for some folks. Now more than ever, if the market is moving, you need someone who's really sharp and is on top of it. And that is Gabe. Give him a call, 832-557-1095. Really sharp guy, great Longhorn, really good dude. Even if you are not entirely sure what's going on, or even if you're out of state and you're not even sure Gabe can be your mortgage guy, and he can be your mortgage guy for some of y'all, just give him a call. He'll just help you because he's a good guy. Like, say, hey, this is what a mortgage guy is quoting me. I live in Rhode Island. Is this sound right? And Gabe will say, no, that's a bad rate. This guy's taking advantage of you. Here's what you should do. He'll do it just because he's a cool guy. So give him a call. 832-557-1095. Ian, would you ever help people just because you're a cool guy? Or are you always about billing people for everything?
Show me the money.
Yeah, that's been your whole thing ever since I've known you all my life. I was like, Ian, hey, do you want to do a pod tonight? I haven't talked to you in a while. And he's like, Venmo me $20. I was like, really? Come on, man. I thought we were friends. He's like, yeah, we're kind of friends. Send me $20. We'll be even better friends. It's like, fine. So I put it on a payment plan because I don't have $20, but I paid him five and I'm good for five next week. Is that all right, Ian?
Yeah, remember I have a relative that lives in your town. He'll come break your thumbs if
I know, I know, I know. You've threatened me many times. It always works. I always cower eventually. I always fold and pay you. Hey, speaking of getting paid, I don't want to bury this too much because look, both Ian and I and everyone's excited about talking about Texas, Washington. I don't want to do it 14 days out too in deep and too in depth, but I do promise you 7 to 10 days out, we'll have some exhaustive stuff. I'll have a bunch of different perspectives and we'll dissect the whole matchup. But is there anything in the popular media in terms of how they're portraying this matchup that's frustrating to you? Or do you think it's pretty much dead on?
Now, Drew Kelson actually asked me this on a one of our new Inside Texas shows over the weekend.
Ah, very good. Plug that, by the way. There is a new Inside Texas YouTube channel.
Yeah, and check it out, Inside Texas Football, for sure. That's what we're calling it. If you search that, I'm sure it'll come up. I've had a ton of content out this week with all these commitments. There's a video explaining every commitment, how it went down, and what Texas is getting in that player. I think we dropped like three of those today, right? Filsami, Makuba, and Winston, all of them.
So pairing you and Kelson, it was an attempt to get Kelson's elite mind and paired with your experience in athleticism.
Was the idea.
Good.
May have to flip those two.
Well, what? Oh, Kelson is not a good analyst?
I mean,
Oh,
the bigger gap is his athleticism and mine.
I think that's fair. Yeah. I think
He's
there's more parity in terms of analytics and less parity in terms of athleticism.
a thoughtful guy and a great athlete.
He's not only thoughtful, he's very mature. Like, Kelson's pretty deliberative. Like, I'll just pronounce something stupid. What are we doing? This is a stupid coverage. And he'll be like, well, maybe this is what they're trying to do. And yeah, he'll present the other side. He'll do the the best, you know, the Iron Man, you know, not the straw man. He'll do the Iron Man
Steel
version
Man.
of it. The what? Steel Man. Yeah. Iron Man more Black Sabbath.
So he asked me about it, and I confessed to not really knowing what the national like conversation has been. So he clued me in. And I it seems to be not totally unfairly, but overly focused on can Texas defend Washington?
100%.
So I think it's just like from a fight promotion side, that's how you sell this game.
Elite quarterback, three elite receivers going against the tough Texas defense, but they're vulnerable in the secondary. So, yeah.
That's the promo,
That
right?
is.
Obviously, what could decide the game is the opposite. Can Washington stop Texas from just running up and down the field like they did on Oklahoma State? The other one
So,
won't matter in that event.
that's right. And look, is Texas bringing in their A game fully capable of dropping 42 on Washington? Yep.
Probably.
Absolutely. The interesting thing is Washington's defense, you could see what they do poorly, you could see what they do well. One thing that's interesting is they hold up enough. And you know, when they played Oregon twice now this year. Both times Oregon scored in the 30s, right? The low 30s. And that was exactly what Washington needed to hold them to win those games. And Oregon moved the ball. The first match, they moved the ball pretty effortlessly, but they bogged down in the red zone and then didn't convert some key fourth down stuff, right? The next time they rematched, Oregon couldn't run the ball at all. But they actually threw the ball, and Bo Nix had some scrambles, right? But Washington again sort of thwarted them from putting up a point expectation that you might that might match their yardage or their field position. And I don't think that's an accident. I think that that's how they play. And I think that's how they'll have to play against Texas. Because if they get overly aggressive with Texas consistently, we're going to boat race them. So I think they've seen enough of our flaws in the red zone that they might think, hey, holding Texas to field goals is victory, right? So I
I'll be
think that might
shocked.
be the approach. What do you think?
Yeah, I'll be shocked if they're not in too high or a soft cover three for most of the game. Looking back, it's not Iowa State, sorry, Oklahoma State would drop one of their safeties back to Plano every snap. But Texas was like 4 for 4 in the red zone or something unexpectedly great. So it didn't matter.
Also, Oklahoma State, in fairness, they didn't really know what they were doing, and they're not very good, right? No, I mean, I'm serious. Like they had once they had a couple of injuries in that secondary, it was over, right?
Had injuries in that game?
Yeah, their number one corner went out fairly early.
Oh, that's right.
But Washington's pretty experienced in the secondary. And interestingly, you know,
They have
they
Oklahoma
don't
State's
jump
old
off.
best corner.
Sorry.
They have Oklahoma State's former best corner.
Yeah, they do have Oklahoma State's former best corner. Actually, gave Xavier Worthy a tough time
Yes,
when
he did.
before Worthy got hurt. So I'm sure Worthy's got that circled. But what struck me about watching their secondary is their experience. They know what they're doing, and they're pretty physical. They are not fast. Doesn't mean they're slow. I'm not saying they're running in molasses, but they're best at knowing where to be and being physical when they're there. And they certainly dropped that on Oregon because Oregon tried to run on the perimeter against them, and Washington was not having it.
It's a lot of Jaron Thompson.
A lot of that. And but some of those guys that Washington has in their secondary are 6'2", 210, 6'2",
bigger.
215. That
Yeah.
said, this is a repeated theme for Texas this season. When I see that in most of the secondaries that we played in the Big 12, I know we're about to have a big passing day. And it's held up every time. Baylor, it certainly held up against Iowa State once Quinn got in rhythm, and because Sark was making amazing calls and aims, we weren't always executing. Also, we kind of extolled the virtues of Nick Saban with a month to prepare.
Sark,
how big a script can you prepare in a month? Like, you might be able to write Lawrence of Arabia, right? It doesn't have to be a short film.
Yeah. You know what else? Quinn with a month to prepare.
Yes, sir.
Is a very he's a different, that's, you're getting crew cut Quinn for sure in that environment. I don't think I've ever seen Quinn in a game where he had, you know, good prep fail to make pretty good.
Yeah.
The only qualifier is the Oklahoma game this year. And even that game, he was at times as brilliant as he's been ever.
His second half was amazing.
It was. So here's something we've been debating some on the Inside Texas YouTube channel. Drew brought it to me and talked about it with Justin and Joe too the other day. If you're Sark, do you plan to go in and just be in your bag like against Oklahoma State and try to light up the scoreboard?
Yeah.
Or do you have a plan to mix in a lot of runs and try to slow the game down and play keep away from Penix and Odunze and them?
Score points. In fact, I think a misunderstanding of Washington, people think that their offense is fast paced, no huddle. It's actually fairly deliberate.
Yeah.
They're just high powered.
It's very similar to Texas's offense.
Very similar to Texas. They're just, when they're all healthy, they're more efficient. Because Michael Penix is what, a 6-year quarterback, and you know, they've got these three NFL receivers. And you know,
Odunze is going to be the best receiver at the game.
Odunze should have won the Biletnikoff. I think that was unfair.
Who won?
Harrison Jr. Hype.
Well,
I mean, Marvin Harrison Jr. is awesome. He'll be the number three pick in the draft. But Rome Odunze was amazing for Washington.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think you score points. I don't, and whatever form that comes. I don't think you do throwaway runs to slow the game down. And by the way, if Keelan Robinson can pop a 50-yard run, even better. Like, you know, run to the edge, like do things that you think will work. But be Oklahoma State. Put points on the board and try to bury them on defense. Because part of the reason Washington plays deliberatively on offense is to protect their defense.
Yeah.
That's... Yeah. Washington, I promise you, could be even more spectacular on offense if they wanted to be. If Penix is fully capable of going no huddle, and they've got three very experienced receivers, and they got a good pass blocking O-line, they could just destroy some people with pace, right? They don't do it for a reason, because they're trying to keep their snap count on defense down. And if you know that going in, let's get the snap count on their defense up. Let's make these guys fold. And if Washington, I mean, if Texas wins a shootout 45 to 31, cool. Who cares? I don't care.
Yeah, that's great. Like,
we're trying to win by a point. Like this, like chess aesthetic of, oh, we're gonna have these throwaway runs because we want to control pace, control clock. If Xavier Worthy's in single coverage out on the edge, we need to throw a 50-yard touchdown. Like,
I mostly agree. I think that's where Texas has been their best this year. That's how they beat Alabama.
Mostly agree is an insult. Where do you disagree?
Well, Drew Kelson made the other suggestion, and I was being deferential to Drew's points.
Oh, do you think we should install the wishbone?
No, but he was like in the second quarter in particular. This is probably from a defensive mind here. He's like, in the second quarter in particular, if you can like slow things down and go on a long drive with runs, you can really put an offense out of sorts. Which just seems valuable because they're so good.
Yeah, I
But
mean, so it's that's tough to control. I mean, I look, I mean, Washington's defense isn't so bad that we can toy with them. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, we need to run our best stuff and try to score. And I appreciate what Drew's saying. Look, if the running game, if look, if Washington is cover two and those two safeties are 21 yards back because they're terrified of Worthy and Mitchell, let's hand off the ball because handing off the ball will be productive, right?
I mean, that's maybe what it comes down to, right?
Sure. I mean, that's fine. I'm not saying to force it, but I'm saying like run your best stuff and don't worry about, like let the chips fall where they may. I don't know. That's my perspective.
It's
It's
probably going to be
difficult.
academic.
Sorry.
Well, maybe not. I was going to say it might be academic. They may just force Texas to run the ball. But to your point, with 210-pound safeties, when you have Whittington and Sanders, and then like Mitchell running like, some of the post curl kind of things he runs in the middle of the field, they could play conservative and drop back, and you could still be like, okay,
We'll take an 18-yard gain.
we're
Cool.
going to throw it for 10 to 15 in the intermediate all day long,
Yeah.
and you're going to die.
Well, the other issue too is when you put men back, I mean that's cool. You just by alignment, you'll disallow certain routes, assuming you play them confidently, right? But the issue that Washington's going to have is if they're too soft, their deficit in quickness and raw speed will come up when you hit Xavier Worthy for 7 yards. He faces up on a guy and runs by him. That's where it gets really dangerous because now you're throwing low risk, easy completion passes that Quinn is particularly good at, by the way, right? That short to intermediate game. And now your superior athletes are facing up on your dudes who are coming from another spot and they're running up and they're trying to get a piece of them, and suddenly that's becoming a 30-yard game, right? And that's where things just fall apart. And Washington, to their credit, no one's done that to them, including Oregon, who's pretty quick. Well, Oregon did in the first game.
Oregon did that a little bit in the second game too.
They did, but Bo Nix actually has parallels to Quinn Ewers, doesn't he?
A little bit.
Because I know Bo is a better athlete, like bigger, stronger, better athlete, better runner. But Oregon secretly, their staff was scared of Bo Nix. So it always made me laugh that he was a Heisman contender because his A dot was about 6 yards down the field, right? His average depth of the target. And I can't tell you, I think I mentioned this, but if I didn't, maybe I did it offline, but I was watching a Heisman highlight thing, like previewing the Heisman. Did I tell you this?
Yeah, I don't remember if it was a pod or offline. Good.
Oh, okay. And so the announcer, they're going through the different guys, and they show the LSU guy Daniels, and he like slips three tackles and spins 360, and then hits Malik Nabers like on a line in double coverage for a 60-yard touchdown, right? And then they show Bo Nix, and he throws the ball out to the flat. The guy spins. Makes a tackle or miss, runs over another guy, runs to the tackle and goes 80 yards. And they're like, Bo Nix! He threw six touchdowns in this game in the first half, folks. And you're just like, good job, Bo. Anyway, the point is there are replicable aspects. Quinn, I think, is actually more accurate as a passer than Nix. I know that's crazy for people when they compare the completion percentages, but I'm talking about the types of throws he's asked to make. Quinn can make high difficulty throws that are intermediate, right? And people think high difficulty throws are all down the field. And some of the easier throws in football are actually throwing a deep fade to an open guy against a certain coverage, right? So, in any event, I like how some of that sets up because if so, let me ask you this. Do you know if Xavier Worthy's healthy? Do we know that? Or is that something we could even talk about publicly? I don't know. I don't actually know the answer.
I actually think he's fine.
Like, fine? or like running around looking like Xavier Worthy?
I honestly have not heard.
Okay, well, that's something we need to find out, because if he's ready to go and can like plant his foot and do stuff, I don't think Washington can cover that guy.
You're right. Well, they'll put Jabbar on him, and then they'll have the half field safety to that side bailing.
I mean, that's cool, but I'm still you're still left with some of these crossing routes and face up situations, right?
Yeah. Well, maybe not face up if you're pr pressed up on him with like Muhammad.
Man, if they're going to press him, that would be very interesting.
Yeah.
And you give him too much attention from that safety, Mitchell is going to hurt you, or Sanders, right? Or Jaden Blue leaking out of the backfield.
That's the one, right? That's the one where I just they run out of answers for that kind of deal.
Yeah. Texas has a lot of cards to play.
You want to hear a hot take? I don't, maybe we're close to the ending.
Yeah, we are close to the end, so I want to hear your hot take that's going to make this viral.
Yeah, let's go viral. If Sark or whoever was calling plays for USC in 2005 had gotten to the tight end fullback passing game earlier in the Rose Bowl and leaned on it more, USC would have kept Texas at arm's length and won that game. Because Texas's linebackers, I love you, Drew. Texas's linebackers, I don't actually, probably wasn't his fault anyway, were really struggling with some of their actions throwing to the tight end and the fullback.
Oh, are you remembering Drew Kelsen running stride for stride with Mr. Bush and getting robbed of his interception?
I mean, there was that. I mean,
Okay.
again, I don't think Drew is the problem.
No, I
Drew
think
is
you're right. So
I don't
actually,
know if
if
there
you
was Drew
remember early in that
Harris.
game, USC targeted that and they tried to get a fullback on a
Yeah.
fullback streak, remember? And then Cedric Griffin dropped that big hit.
Yeah.
By the way, all the big hits in that game would have been targeting.
I know.
Every single one. Both teams would have had like four dudes sitting out.
Yeah, Leinart may have been concussed before the half.
Briefly, yeah.
Yeah.
Think Big Rod Wright landed on him, right?
I think somebody he was going he was trying to slide and or go down and somebody kind of held him up. But
Oh.
Texas guy came in and shoulder to the face.
Nice.
Yeah, so the deep shot they got into trouble. But like at some points in the game they started finding like underneath stuff. It was a problem. It was a big problem for Texas.
Also, Leinart, whatever happened to him in the pros is irrelevant. As a college quarterback,
Outstanding.
freaking phenomenal accuracy.
So I
Yeah.
think, yeah, there's a that game could have gone a little differently if they had
Your
had
take was less hot than I thought.
the USC might have had the stuff to win that game.
I mean, I thought you were going to say something like Quinn Ewers is going to be better than Drake May and Caleb Williams. Because he stayed in 2024.
Oh, that might be true. I don't know about Caleb Williams, but I think getting another year of college reps is going to do a lot for him.
Agree. I think it's going to help him a lot, his body and his mind.
Yeah. You
Well,
know what? Are you okay? One more. That take wasn't hot enough for you. I got one more hot take.
all right, drop another.
So we were chatting, me and Joe, Justin. Austin Novosad goes to Oregon, and they just took two guys in the portal ahead of him, Dylan Gabriel and Dante Moore from UCLA.
Yeah.
USC took Will Howard from Kansas State, which I think actually is going to be really good there. That could be a hot take too, I guess, from your
I don't
face.
think that's a hot take. I think maybe Riley got us a little tired of the creativity and wants to get a guy just to distribute.
I think that he I think he's a slam dunk in his offense. But Malachi Nelson transfers out like immediately. If you're a young blue chip quarterback, if I'm a big program right now, I don't want to play a blue chip quarterback in their first 2 years. I would rather they're in year three before they see the field for me. Because that's just where the game is going. You just want the distributor who can You can download your playbook too, and it's we're kind of back to the way things used to be. I never want to start a sophomore or freshman quarterback unless they're a running threat.
Here's the difference. Oh, that's a great addendum. That's true. Here's the
Yeah.
difference. The way things used to be was you came in, guaranteed red shirt, sat your freshman year, you held a clipboard, you learned the offense. Right? Red shirt freshman year, right? You've already sat out.
Yeah.
Now you're actually the second string quarterback, maybe. Right?
Yeah.
Maybe third string. By your third year, your redshirt sophomore year, if you're really talented, you might be the starter.
Yeah.
Or you're still waiting and you're going to be the guy in your fourth year, your junior year. The difference now is it's not happening at one school. You train and
So,
educate.
no, you're blowing my deal. You're blowing my deal.
Ah,
You're blowing
well,
my deal.
maybe it's my deal. Maybe I thought of it before you did.
No, how about this? If I'm
Okay.
a blue chip quarterback, there is a real argument to be made for betting on yourself and starting at a small school
Yeah.
and starting immediately and then transferring for your NIL payday after a couple years starting.
Yeah, that's an interesting debate people have been having,
And
particularly if
it's
you're a
better for
certain
your
type.
development.
Yeah, if you're a certain type of quarterback, right? The problem is if you go to that small school, quote unquote, assuming you're going to go to one that has a good coach, right?
Yeah.
At any moment, you can lose your coach. Now you could follow him or you could transfer out, but there is some potential for instability there too, right? But
Yes.
there's an argument that if you're a mid-level FBS quarterback prospect, you should go to an elite like G5 program, right? With an offense that fits you and suits you, and go start early. And then prove yourself on the field and then go to the Ole Misses and the Tennessees.
Or even in North Dakota State or something.
Yeah, maybe even an elite FCS school, maybe.
But because right now, like a lot of the guys that are making it in the NFL, like I don't think you can be a really good NFL starter unless you're an insane athlete who can improv, or you've got the like, in, what is it in the sports gene, the like 10,000 hour. Chess master, 10,000 game chess master deal to train your brain to be able to see the pieces moving. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know if you.
you have to have elite software or hardware, or preferably both.
Yeah. I don't know that you, I don't know that you can become a good quarterback in the NFL before you've taken a gazillion reps in live games.
Yeah, I mean, that's increasingly they people point to the Mitch Trubisky experiment, right? 15 game starter at North Carolina, limited sample, goes to the NFL, and you realize that he doesn't really know how to play quarterback. And the NFL doesn't have time to teach you.
Yep.
So, pretty interesting stuff, man. Well, hey, on that note, it would not be an Ian podcast if we didn't go on multiple tangents. Your second hot take was better than your first. I still don't think it's particularly hot because it's probably true. But we'll try to come up with something more inflammatory.
If I put it in a different platform,
Yes.
it would generate more pushback, I think.
All right. With more lots of exclamation points
Yeah.
and start the statement with fools, comma. All right. Hey folks, thank you so much for listening. Please support our sponsors and please support this new Inside Texas YouTube channel. Sounds awesome. And I'm looking forward to participating in it as well. I am sadly getting on a flight back to the United States tomorrow. Not sad to go back home. But sad to leave the beaches, man. Mexico is awesome. Had a good time. Did some good fishing. Did some good snorkeling. It's a good time. I think we need to have our next Inside Texas team meeting down in Cabo. Just run a resort, have some meetings, write it off. What do you think, Ian?
I think that would be the end of the company.
We just should stay.
I think
Just all become charter boat captains.
someone would die. It'd be like the Hangover or something.
All right, on that happy note, For Ian Boyd, I'm Paul Wadlington saying, hook 'em. Do you need a realtor in Central Texas? Of course you do. We all need a realtor in Central Texas, even those of us who live in Dallas or Houston or San Francisco or Denver, Colorado. You need to go to Central Texas anyway. And the reason is Laura Baker is a fantastic realtor. She's great at what she does. She's a member of the elite Andy Allen team for Keller Williams. You can reach her at 512-784-0505. Talk with Laura if you're thinking about putting your house on the market. This is a great time to get market comps. If you're looking to buy in the market, you need all the help you can get. Call Laura and it's 512-784-0505.